Good morning. my name's Carol Kramer, and I have a story for all ages, and I know usually the children come up for that, but I've got, I think it's a story that you might want to sit next to your parents, and if you get scared, then you can hold on to them. So, let me tell you about my fan. It belonged to one of my grandmothers, although at this point, now that my hair is gray, I don't remember if it belonged to Grandma Baldwin or Grandma Kramer. It's one of those paper souvenir kind. There's black balsa wood ribs. There's a picture of a peacock. There's blue and pink flowers and mountains in the background. And there's little tiny letters that say, "Made in the People's Republic of China." I took it with me to Arizona in July because I knew it would be very hot, and I knew that even a water bottle and sunscreen and sunglasses and a wide-brimmed hat might not be enough to keep me from getting heat stroke. So, indeed, for the whole morning of Thursday, July 29th, I mostly did one thing. I fluttered my fan. The back of a fan is plain white. The singing and praying at the big worship service on that morning included many kinds of faith and many colors of people. There were many more people than they could fit into the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral sanctuary. Afterwards, we all walked in a long procession through downtown Phoenix to a small plaza near the county jail. I didn't want anyone to think I was silly with my flowers and my bird, so I was glad to have a plain white side. The air between the tall buildings was beginning to warm, even though the sun was still low in the sky. I fluttered my fan. White honors the color of my skin. White honors surrender and truce. White honors mourning and grief. And bright white helped me catch the attention of Peter and Rita as they were being led to the police vans, while I stood on the other side of a very long line of police officers who stood as a fence around the city intersection. Air from the Gulf of Mexico was bringing humidity and promised clouds, lightning, thunder. People standing near me, outside the police line, smiled to feel a small breeze. I fluttered my fan. My work that day was to support my friends in declaring that the intersection at First and Washington was a human rights zone. We would stop traffic by standing in the middle of the street in protest of an unjust law and that it violated human rights. I helped hold up the giant human rights zone flag. I handed out water and offered sunscreen to the circle of people who were determined to stay there no matter what happened. Soon the police formed a circle around the intersection. So I moved off the street and stood under a very small tree on the corner. I could see that my friends inside the police circle in the intersection were singing, and that other support people in yellow t-shirts, like this shirt, on the far side of the street outside the police line were also singing, but I couldn't hear what the song was. I fluttered my fan. The crowd on my side of the street became smaller, but felt a bit wilder. Many of the other people in yellow t-shirts had left to go support another group who had chained themselves across the entrance to the county jail. Very close to me, there was a young man with an amplified bullhorn shouting, "We will not comply," and "Arrest Sheriff Joe." Some people laughed and pointed at the people who were singing in the street and asked, "Why are they doing that?" I fluttered my fan. A woman smelling of beer whirled in front of me. She had long, loose gray hair, jagged yellow teeth, high cheekbones. She had many tattoos on her bare arms, and she smiled at me as if we were at a party. I wondered if she was a grandmother, but she disappeared without either of us getting a chance to speak amid the wildness and the noise. Like me, she probably had noticed that there was a second circle of police that was starting to form that could have easily pulled us into the arrest zone. I stepped back and fluttered my fan. The police politely led my friends away from where they had been sitting and standing and singing in the intersection. The police took their valuables from them for safekeeping before they put handcuffs on them and put them into the white police vans. When I waved my fan over the heads of the police circle, Peter saw me and pointed. The police line parted so that the officer who had taken his backpack and hat could give them to me. I said, "Thank you," and stepped back. I fluttered my fan. It took a long time for every single person who had been standing in the intersection to be arrested, because the police had to warn people and make sure they understood that they would be arrested if they didn't leave the street. Rita was the very last of all. I waved my fan again, and again the police line parted to allow the officer arresting her to come give me the things she didn't want to take with her into the jail. When they put the plastic handcuffs on her and pushed her into the van, I started to cry, and I fluttered my fan. At the beginning of the summer, I went to a big meeting of Unitarian Universalists, the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. I saw old friends there, and I made new friends. My friends who had come from Arizona told me how the people in their state really needed help because the police were frightening them, particularly if their skin was brown. Particularly if your skin is brown, the police might stop you for even the most minor traffic law in breaking even the most minor traffic law. If you're white and get stopped for breaking a minor law, the police write you a ticket and send you home. In Arizona, if you are brown, they want to ask you to prove that you are really an American. And they want to ask for lots of kinds of identification. And they expect you to be good at speaking English. If they are at all suspicious that you aren't what they consider a legal American, they put you in jail and possibly send you far away from your family and home and friends. The police say they are just trying to keep us all safe from bad people. But this way of doing things hurts many, many innocent people. The UUs from Arizona told me that many people planned to stand up all together on July 29th and say, "No, don't do this way." When my Arizona friends asked, "Will you come stand in solidarity with us? Will you bring some friends from California?" I had to say yes. There will be more in this service about our trip to Arizona. I don't know how much there's going to be about the Unitarian Universalist Association, so if that's what you came to hear about, you may be disappointed. But Peter and Rita are going to speak some more, and the time has come for the children to go to their own classes. I hope any children who are here will ask their parents and grandparents about what they hear from Peter and Rita and what they think about these things. Right now, though, do you remember that when you say an affirmation, you are saying yes? Will you join me? I thought Deborah was going to come do this with me. Here she is. So, Deborah will be leading us and the children in our affirmation of being Unitarian Universalists.
Hello. We have a small crowd this morning because some of our kids are at a retreat. Our middle schoolers are at their first middle school retreat, some of them anyway. And before we do our affirmation, I wanted you to take a look at these precious faces here and think about whether or not you would like to help out in religious education. We need your help. We have a great program and we have a lot of fun. and we need teachers. But you don't have to be a teacher to teach in RE. Actually, I think it's more like facilitating. Today in our worship circle, we'll do some worship, and then we're going to talk about, guess what, civil disobedience. And we're going to learn more about what happened in Arizona, and what happened with Susan B. Anthony, and what happened with Rosa Parks. And it's a wonderful opportunity just to get to know the children and to teach them what Unitarian Universalism is all about. So we really, really need teachers, and I'm going to be around after service. There are two ways you can serve. You can do a one-shot deal where you come on a worship Sunday and just spend the morning with the kids, or you can do a longer commitment of 8 Sundays teaching a curriculum. So please consider it and see me after church. And now, let us lead the affirmation. We are...
My name's Peter Wilson, and I'm one of the UU members that were arrested in Phoenix on July 29th of this year. To be honest, I'm a little bit more afraid right now than I was when I got arrested. my memory doesn't work that great when I'm this scared, so I hope this makes sense. Thank you. Hearing that song also brought up a lot of emotion that had died down in the time since, so we'll work through that as well. This year is about my 20th UU anniversary. I started back in Paducah, Kentucky, listening to messages about wild horses, Emerson, transcendentalism, oxygen tension, and Star Trek. I've spent about a month total at the all-congregation retreat, about 3 weeks at UU men's retreats, and many days total at Thai groups and men's groups, and what seems like years at committee meetings. During all this time, I've never been asked to share my thoughts during a service. But you go and get arrested and, and see what happens. To be honest, I didn't become a UU 20 years ago when I started in Paducah, Kentucky, or even 10 years ago when I signed our membership book here in Santa Rosa. But there's no doubt in my mind that... And more importantly, no doubt in my heart, that this community is my spiritual home and Unitarian Universalism is my faith. And I think that's really what I've been asked to share about here today, my faith. Eventually, 3 of us decided to drive to Phoenix to take part in the protest, Carol Kramer, Rita Butterfield, and myself. We weren't sure what the outcome would be when we got there, but we decided... we would decide when we got there. We arrived in Phoenix early in the afternoon of the 28th, the day before the protest. I was pretty travel weary. We hadn't slept very well, but my feelings were buoyed by the anticipation of the events to come. On our way in, we were surprised to receive word that a federal judge had put a hold on some of the more controversial elements of SB 1070, so we were not sure what to expect when we arrived. When we did arrive at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Phoenix, the place where everyone was meeting for instructions and training, we found that the protest was still going on, and if anything, with more energy than ever before. Carol, Rita, and I all decided to train for direct action civil disobedience, which was among several options on the schedule of activities planned for the next day. After the training came the moment of truth. We were going to try to come to a decision. So Carol, Rita, and I kind of huddled together with the intent to make a group decision. We decided to go through with it. I remember Rita asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I came down here to practice civil disobedience, and I saw a big smile come over her face. Said, I did too. The next day, we arrived downtown outside Sheriff Joe's office after marching from a local Catholic church. There, among hundreds of protesters, an organizer approached me and said, if you're going to practice civil disobedience, meet over by the Statue of the Phoenix in 20 minutes. At the statue, as we began to arrive, the reality of what we were about to do started to settle in on me, and the internal process of following through took on a very earnest and serious tone. After some brief last-minute instructions and decisions, the moment arrived. I remember the thought, there's no turning back now. Actually, I could have, but inside, I didn't feel that way. Surprisingly, most of the next 28 hours were not emotionally or psychologically difficult to bear. Conversely, I've had few more meaningful experiences in my life. Physically, however, it was quite an endurance contest. We weren't allowed to sleep, and it was very cold and drafty in the jail, in contrast to the heat outside. Toward the end of my incarceration, however, after we had all seen the judge and we were feeling very high, another man of color began to speak to the crowd of mostly white UU protesters in the cell. In broken English, he struggled to make a small speech. He was very emotional and moved by the experience we had all shared, but he made it clear that he was very moved by the fact that so many white people had come and protested in support of the immigrants. There was a long pause. We were all very moved. Then another person shared about their experience, and another, and another. It was hard to believe that we were all sitting in jail, sharing from our hearts and souls with people we had just met only a few days before. Before long, we were all processed out, all but me. I realized it had been some time and my name had not been called, and I became concerned. Outside the jailhouse, I could hear loud cheering every time someone was released, but a long time had passed and no cheering. I'd really started to feel the effects of the lack of sleep and food and the hostile attitudes of the deputies in the jail. I could not imagine why my name had not been called. I started to panic. From the moment the trip had begun, for the first time, I was alone and without the comfort and support of my Unitarian Universalist community. I really felt like crying, but I couldn't. I felt ashamed of myself because I was allowing myself to feel abandoned and isolated. This is not about me, I was thinking to myself, but it was impossible for me to suppress my feelings. For the next hour or so, I struggled hard to hold myself together. Eventually, I was released, and there were supporters still waiting for me outside the jailhouse, even though most had to go because of the potluck and closing service had already started at the Valley UU Church in Phoenix, where we were all to meet up. In the weeks since, strong emotions and feelings of the camaraderie have diminished and the cares of daily life have again taken their rightful place, but I have changed. I have changed mostly in how much I realize how important community is to my well-being, not just some vague abstract concept of community, but the real presence of eyes, faces, and smiles to see, of arms and hands to hold. I've learned that we really need to be physically present to each other to be whole. I also see now how wrong it is for us to deprive for even one day the presence of even one immigrant mother to her child. It is inhuman, and it is against the law of love.
Morning.
So I spent hours putting together this slideshow of all the pictures I could gather from the internet of the things that happened on July 29th, and I couldn't get it to work. So I'm sorry, because actually a picture tells 1,000 words, I think. So what I'm going to do is figure out what went wrong and then see if I can find a way to make it available electronically. And also, Peter Carroll and I are going to be talking at a Hot Topics on September 12th about our experience in Phoenix, and there'll be time for question and answer then, and I'll have the slideshow fixed by then, so some of you can see it there. And actually, Carol and Peter said everything, so let's see what I can do. So when the police told one of the organizers of our group of civil disobedience that the arrest would begin soon, all of us who had overtaken the intersection in front of the Wells Fargo building where Sheriff Joe Arpaio has his plush offices put down the banner that declared Arizona a human rights zone and linked arms. We formed two circles facing out, a circle of people standing and a smaller circle of people sitting on pads that had magically appeared to protect us from the pavement that was hot enough to give us third-degree burns. It was hot, and it was scary. And actually, like Peter, singing the breathing meditation kind of brought back some of those feelings, and I just remembered how hot and how thirsty I was. Because the people who'd been supporting us, like Carol, with water, couldn't come anymore because the police were, you know, it was an arrest zone now. So they couldn't bring us water anymore. Anyway, so there were a lot of police around us. I wish I had the pictures because you would be amazed at the number of police that were there to arrest a bunch of church ladies. The young seminarian sitting next to me started singing the breathing meditation. When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love. And those of us sitting with her joined her. And then those who were in the circle standing joined in. And we continued meditating on our breath and on peace and on love for approximately 40 minutes as our group grew smaller and smaller because we were arrested one person at a time. It was such a helpful practice to be sitting and thinking of our breathing. I really was trying to breathe out love to the police who were all around us, who looked really hot in their big black uniforms. After a few minutes of our sitting and breathing, the police cleared the intersection, and anyone who did not want to be arrested was moved to the sidewalks. But before that happened, I was given an amazing gift. A Latino man, maybe in his early 20s, was thin and small of stature, leaned in and took a close-up picture of my face. I smiled at him as I breathed in and breathed out, and he leaned in closer and whispered in my ear, "Thank you, I will never forget you." And his words assured me that I was doing the right thing. Gosh, sorry.
<We're not.
laughs> That young man's gratitude was one of the things that sustained me during the 27 hours I spent in Sheriff Arpaio's jail. I did not like being in jail. I know that might sound funny. Jail is not supposed to be pleasant. It was, though, worse than I thought it would be. After all, we hadn't even been formally accused of anything, and people are supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. If I had known... if I had known what it would be like, I probably would not have chosen to be arrested, so I'm glad I didn't know. And my advice to you is this, actually. Don't ever go to jail. Unless you do it on purpose with a group of people, with a group of people supporting you, and you know there's going to be a crowd cheering when you're released, under only those conditions. Anyway, we had to remain in handcuffs during the entire booking process. Thankfully, the cuffs were moved so that now our arms were in front of our bodies. However, any of us who reported to the medical staff who did intake that we took medication, we were made to give a urine sample. And I don't want to be too specific, but go ahead and imagine what it might be like to pee into a cup with your hands tied together. And that humiliation turned out to be for naught. I think the experience was different for the men, but we women did not receive our medications. One woman with severe arthritis was actually confined to a cell in isolation because she needed a wheelchair. The guards told her it was because she would need help using the toilet, but she was the only African-American woman in our group, so it's hard to say. During her time in solitary, she was not given any pain medicine or blankets or told what was happening. We didn't know where she was either. We women who were together didn't know where she was. A woman who was in the cell with me needed medication for a chronic back pain. Again and again, the guards told her no, and she suffered. A third woman who was prescribed methadone for a pain related to a chronic illness was finally given her medication when the rest of us could see that she was at risk of having a seizure from withdrawal. So we as a group just yelled at the guards until they finally acquiesced. The food in jail was terrible. Sheriff Arpaio prides himself on having lowered food costs to 87 cents per day per prisoner. It was cold and we were not allowed blankets. It was not possible to sleep. The bright fluorescent lights were kept on. There was no place but the concrete floor to lie down. And the guards kept inexplicably moving people between the three cells in which that we were held in. We learned from women in the jail who had been in jail before that toilet paper has many uses. A roll of toilet paper or a thick old-fashioned maxi pad, the only things allowed in the cell, make pretty good pillows. Toilet paper can be wrapped around bare arms to create a sweater of sorts, and a roll of toilet paper can be unraveled to create a thin but better than nothing mattress. Although the Phoenix police who arrested us had been polite and actually kind, the county deputies who guarded us were anything but. Whenever we were moved from our cells, we were shouted at to shut up and stand against the wall. I found it difficult to be treated with such disrespect, and those feelings made me all the more aware of my privileged place in our society. Although it shouldn't be, it is luxury, I realized, to expect to be treated with respect by the police, something that I normally take for granted. The worst thing for me, though, was being disconnected from the world outside. I could not reach Chris. There was a payphone in the cell, but I couldn't remember his phone number. Thanks, auto-dial. And I didn't know what the other UUs were doing. Were there more protests? Was there a party? Was I missing something? There was no way to measure time, and some of the guards would tell us what time it was when we asked, but others said it was none of our business or they simply walked away. And to me, that was really the hardest part, just kind of being disconnected, and I realized, you know, how connected I am. During the afternoon and all night, women who had just been arrested and booked or who were being transferred to another facility were brought in and out of our cell. Many of them recognized us from the TV news. They were impressed to be in the cell with such celebrities and grateful that a group of mostly middle-aged church ladies would stand up for their community, for they were, with one or two exceptions, women of color. I learned some things about racism in the Maricopa jail. But I didn't go to Phoenix to learn about racism or jail. I went because of a law that scapegoats immigrants and Latinos. I went because of an immigration system that separates families, that makes people in some communities afraid to call the police. I went because my ancestors came here on a boat a century and a half ago, and they were made into scapegoats. But there was no law insisting that they be deported. And so my grandparents were born citizens of the United States, and I'm an American. I went because this year, 243 people that we know of died in the Sonora Desert. Immigration is a complicated issue. Currently, at least 12 million people live in the United States without the legal authorization to do so. People of good faith might seriously disagree about what that fact means for our country, and people with love in their hearts can have very different opinions about what we should do about it. One fact, though, is indisputable. The law known as Arizona SB 1070 is wrong. Even after a federal judge stayed some of the most draconian provisions, the law encourages racial profiling and criminalizes compassion. This law violates our most valued Unitarian Universalist principles of affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person, promoting justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, pursuing the goal of world peace, of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respecting the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. I went to Phoenix to stand with immigrants and people of color because SB 1070 is wrong. The actual name of SB 1070 is the Support Our Law Enforcement and Safe Neighborhoods Act. The stated aim of the legislation is attrition through enforcement. In other words, the goal is to create such fear of being detained or deported that people will leave Arizona. The law does not just affect so-called illegal immigrants. According to the law, any person who's arrested must be held until his or her legal status can be determined. The fine for not carrying papers with you is $100 and 20 days in jail for a first offense. In practical terms, this law makes having brown skin or a Spanish accent an arrestable offense. One of the least known but I think most insidious provisions in SB 1070 is that it makes it illegal to transport, harbor, or shield an alien. Cars used to transport people without legal status are subject to being impounded. In other words, a woman who drives her mother to the doctor can be charged with a Class 1 misdemeanor and have her car taken away. A church van driver who picks up parishioners and brings them to church because they don't have driver's license could potentially be charged with a Class 6 felony if the van is holding more than 10 people who don't have papers, and the church could lose its van. A husband could be arrested for allowing his wife to live in their house. SB 1070 is wrong, so I went to Phoenix. I went to Phoenix and chose to be arrested because my faith calls me to proclaim injustice when I see it, to offer hope when I can stand on the side of love. I went to Phoenix because I could. Oh, I think we sing next, right? So we're going to sing This Land Is Your Land, and the words are on the blue insert in your order of service. The hymns that I chose for this service, by the way, are all songs that we sung in jail. We women Unitarian Universalists actually had a pretty good time in some ways.